Thank you, Pete. Well, all I can say for your Chicago people is that you're gluttons for punishment. Well, good morning, you noble warriors of the Battle of the Bottle. You Akronites have certainly distinguished yourselves above and beyond the call of duty. This Founders Day breakfast is certainly well named, it seems to me, for it links us together. It brings us closer in working for a common cause. And this being the carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, if I needed a reason to be here, and I don't, I know that I don't, you would find this reason in step number one. I am an alcoholic. I can handle it. And I could also give you another reason as to why I am here. In the second part of this 12th step, it says, and carry this message to the other alcoholics. Well, my personal observations, as scantly as they have been, have shown me that in order to make this program, it takes determination and sacrifice. That's determination and sacrifice, pretty much like the story of the three drunks that were on a plane. They're coming from overseas. This plane is loaded with passengers. And somewhere between the two shores, the plane reaches the point of no return. There's engine trouble, and quickly the pilot alerts the passengers and says, the plane is losing altitude. You will have to get rid of your luggage and all the expensive souvenirs that you bought in overseas, which the passengers did very reluctantly, and still the plane lost altitude. And then this pilot said, well, we're in trouble. Not serious, but we're in trouble. And now we ask for someone to make the supreme sacrifice and jump out the plane, and that's where your three drunks come in. Well, there was an Irish. Well, no, I don't think he was an Irish. Now, why should I say that? There was an Englishman. There was a Frenchman and a big six-footer wearing a big 10-gallon hat, whom I suspect to be a Texan. And this Englishman steps up to the open hatch, and he says, I'll jump out first, and out he goes. But before he goes, he says, long live the king. And out he went. The Frenchman goes up next, and he says, vive la France. And out he went. This big Texan staggers up to the open door, and he says, remember the Alamo. And he threw out two Mexicans. Descent, which has nothing to do with anything here in particular, but if there's any more here, maybe we ought to go while we got a chance. Well, friends, if I have no words of eloquence, I don't know any flowery phrases. Mine is a simple program. And yet, within its simplicity, it has had the power to catapult me into a new life and relieve me of my alcoholic obsession. I suppose it. I might tell you how I got into AA and what has happened in the meantime. But it seems to me, now this is only my opinion, and really isn't worth anything, but it seems to me that sometimes when we are called upon to stand before a gathering such as this, we spend too much time, what I consider sometimes the people spending too much time qualifying themselves as alcoholics and very little time in relating what has happened to them, this terrific change that comes after we join in AA, and what we are doing to maintain our sobriety, what AA has done for us, and very little of what we are doing for AA. I think that together, all of us, we all try in our own way to do something for AA. I don't know that I do too much, but I try whenever I'm asked to, well, whatever it may be. Well, maybe I should start at the beginning. You know, I drank for 20 years, which maybe by the yardstick by which you measure an alcoholic, maybe I didn't drink too long. But I think that I can match any man or any woman who is an alcoholic in this audience. I can match you hangover and hangover and nightmare for nightmare. Well, now, for several years before I came into AA, I was searching and I was seeking for a way out of this alcoholic dilemma of mine. Now, when I came into AA, I had no idea that I was an alcoholic. In spite of the fact of all the trouble that a guy has, loss of jobs and loss of family, hospitals, jails, and so on. And yet I wasn't convinced. In fact, I didn't know what an alcoholic was until I came into AA. Well, this particular day that I finally decided to come into AA, I guess that's what I would say decided, but I don't know that whether I decided it or not. Maybe this just happened. Because I happened to be sitting in some old smelly gin mill, and I hadn't been home for about 10 or 12 days or so. I hadn't changed clothes or taken a shave or taken a bath in 10 days. And I was sitting in some booth, and I staggered across the floor, and I asked for a double shot. The shot was poured to me, and as I was about to lift this shot, I caught my reflection in the mirror. Well, I knew who I was in a sense. I knew where I lived, and I knew who my parents and who my relatives were, but there was something missing here, I sensed. For as I stood there, I wondered to myself, who is this man whose lunch I have so often carried? Who is this man whose face I have so often shaven? Is there any potential for decency in this man? And this I could not say, because I had never been decent in the last 20 years. I had never done anything for anybody unless I thought I'd get the best of the deal. And this was, of course, very rare. I had lost all sense of responsibility, all sense of decency, and here I stood before this mirror. And I knew that this man had died a long time ago. Well, maybe not physically, but certainly his spirit had perished somewhere along the line. Well, it takes longer to tell you exactly what was flashing through the screen of my mind as I could reminisce and see the things that had happened partially in my life, just flashes of some of the maybe highlights in my life. And I could see my wife time and again saying to me, "Gene, why can't you stop this insane way of drinking?" And there were times when my wife, most of the people in the Chicago area know my wife. She happens to be a little Irish gal. We've been married 32 years. She's cute as a button, believe me, still. At least I still think so. So I was thinking that when I mentioned this business of Irish was because, it took me so long to qualify for AA. I have been married to this gal for 32 years, so this should qualify me maybe for the title of the All-American Wetback or something. Well, I thought of my wife, the time she had told me, well, she would cry and she would say to me, "Gene, what happened to this young man that I married a long time ago what happened to all the dreams that we had and all the noble resolutions that we made, the plans? All we had decided, like almost any other couple, before we were married, we talked about the things that people who are about to be married talk about, where we were going to live and how we were going to raise a family, if we were going to raise one, what part of town we wanted to live. I don't think that I am any different in many respects from anybody else. I had the same ambitions, the same goals, to live a decent life, to be a respected citizen. All of us had this from the beginning. And it was times like this that she used to bury her face in her hands and sob, wretched sob, because of the terrific disappointment, the broken dreams, and the shattered hope. And that was the cause of this. And why couldn't I couldn't answer why I couldn't stop. I wanted to very desperately, just as desperately as any other alcoholic. And then there was my mother. My mother was a little woman, hardly 5 feet tall. Oh, I promised her 1,000 times that I was going to quit. I promised myself 1,000 times that I was going to quit. My mother had lines on her forehead. She had gray hair. And she walked with a little stoop, like if she carried the burden of the world upon her frail shoulders. This little woman who, a long time ago, had descended into the valley of the shadows to fetch a son, little knowing that her son was going to turn out to be a bum. And this is what I was. I qualified for the title, 100%. And I promised her, oh, 1,000 times that I'd never take another drink. Only, you know what happened. There it was again, and there I found myself drinking again. One thing or another, and it just couldn't. All these things were flashing through my mind. And I think the most important thing that occurred at this time was that I remembered that in a newspaper, one Sunday, I had a terrific hangover, and my wife had picked up a newspaper, and she threw it at me, and she said, read this. Well, I kind of scanned through it, and it was a story about a group of people who call themselves AA, and this article stated that they had a big party at a big hotel on the south side of Chicago on New Year's Eve, and that no liquor had been served, and that these people belonged to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the purpose of this was to help one another. And I thought to myself, well, now how can anybody have fun without getting drunk and without carrying on like I do? Well, anyway, the end of the article ended by saying that these people are going to get up in the morning and they're going to say, good morning, God, instead of, good God. Well, now, this made sense to me because I could associate this little phrase with the many blackouts that I had had, where I had woken up in strange places, hundreds of miles away from home. Well, I finally went home, knocked on the door, snuck in through the back. Well, this wasn't unusual. This is the way I travel to and from home, always through. Never use the front door, always through the alley and after dark where people wouldn't see me. But this day I was brave. It was during daylight hours, and I walked home, knocked on the door, and my wife looked at me and she said, oh, it's you. She says, why don't you get lost? She said, we haven't you caused us enough embarrassment? Haven't you humiliated your family enough? We're better off without you. Why don't you just go away and don't come back? Well, I told her about this business that I wanted to call AA, and to make you a long story short, she let me come in the house. We had a telephone. I don't know why. Because the last time I had used it, at least I think it was the last time, I was calling long distance and I wanted to get a hold of Celine. This is some time back, you can see that. And I was going to tell him off, but I was going to settle all these world crises. He and I were going to get together and we were going to iron everything out. Well, I don't have to tell you that the operator gave me a hard... Well, she didn't. I think I gave her a hard time. And all the things I did on the phone that night, so... But we had still had a phone. My wife gets on the phone and she calls up AA for me. Downtown office in Chicago. And this voice on the other end of the wire said, "Why, we would be glad to help your husband. Have him call when he comes home from work." They're polite people. They're nice people in our Chicago office. They don't like to insult people. And my wife said, "I can do better than this." And with this, she handed me the telephone. And I reached out with trembling hands, not knowing what to expect. When I heard this soft and lovely voice come across the wire and said, "I understand that you have a drinking problem. Do you want to do anything about it?" And I said, "Yes." Well, she told me that two men were coming over that evening to see me. And could I stay away from another drink? And I said, "Well, I'll try." And I did stay away from this drink. And these men arrived. And in the next few moments, after they arrived and they started talking, I could sense that although these men were strangers, yet they were not strangers. I don't know if that makes sense. They were strangers, and yet it seemed like as if I had known these men all my life. I think that you recall, some of you who were here a couple of years ago, when Bill stood up here and he said that there was this thing amongst us of communication. I didn't know what you call this until this couple of years ago. But this was immediately what was established between these men and myself. Instantaneous communication, because they knew my problem, that they understood me, and I sensed in them this feeling of friendliness, this feeling of kindness. They told me, you know, about themselves. They didn't ridicule me. They didn't embarrass me. They didn't shame me. They exposed me for the first time to an atmosphere that I was comfortable in. My relatives and the psychiatrist. Oh, I've been the psychiatrist, too. And after you go through this analysis and whatnot for week after week and month after... That, the state, incidentally, was paying for this. After I went for all these treatments and you play with these little blocks and they give you this Rorschach test. This Rorschach test is nothing more or less than this ink blot test. That's what it is. They have it on a card and they ask you to look at it from every angle, upside down, side anyway, and tell the psychiatrist what you see in it. So I look at this card and I say, "Well, it looks like the face of a dog." And he says, "Well, what makes you think it's the face of a dog?" Then I have to give him a reason why I think it's a dog. And I say, "Well, this looks like the face of a woman. And what makes you think it's a face?" So I have to, well, I said, "It has no Adam's apple or something of the Is it alive or is it dead? If I say it's dead, I have to tell him why I think it's dead. And if I say it's alive, you know. Is it moving or is it standing still?" Oh, finally but you see, I'm sharp. You probably have suspected that already. You know, I was going to outfox the psychiatrist. I was telling him the things I wanted to tell him, I thought. And but he I think he tricked me, the louse, because I looked at this thing, and before I could say anything, I said, "I see a leg." And he said, "A leg of what?" Real fast, like I said, a leg of a horse. "Well, what makes you think it's the leg of a horse?" So fast I said, "It has a hoof on it." Now, you know it wasn't the leg of a horse. But this is what I told the psychiatrist. And all the time he's writing all this stuff I'm telling him that I see and why not. Now, I was afraid that he might write me down as a sex mechanic or something. It's possible, or the possibility is very remote, that he could have helped me, but he couldn't when I was lying to him. But when in AA these people came, I didn't lie to them, and I'm sure they didn't lie to me. And this establishes simple language that needs no words in AA. And I felt that, well, I'll give this thing a try. When these men left my home that evening, they left me with one thing. They left me with hope, because after they had left, I said to my wife, well, maybe this thing will work for me. And as time went on in AA, this hope turned into a little faith. And the combination of hope and faith brought about that great miracle that AA provides to Brian. But this didn't last long. 6 or 7 weeks later, I decided that all you people needed this thing, but me, being the sharpie that I am, I don't need this thing. And I decided to quit. I wasn't feeling very well on this particular day. We have our close meeting on a Thursday night, and I went to bed real early. We started at 8:30, the meeting. This is in the summertime, month of June. But I got in bed real early, and the phone rang while I'm up in bed, and my wife went downstairs to answer the phone. When she came up, I said, who was that? She said, those are the fellas from AA. And I said, what they want? You know, this is me. This is a kind of a chip on my shoulder all the time. And my wife said, why, they don't want anything, Gene. I told them that you weren't feeling well, and they said that they wished you a speedy recovery, and that wouldn't you go back? Because they liked you. They want to be your friend. And I thought to myself, now here's a group of people whom I just met. They're trying to help me get back my self-respect. They're trying to help me be a better father, a better husband, possibly a better citizen, a Christian, and I don't want any part of this. So I jumped on the streetcar that day. I just put on my clothes first, of course. And I arrived at this meeting, and we had a little place, maybe 15, 16 in this group. And somebody said to me, see that guy in the corner? And I looked at him, and I said, yeah. They said, that's our speaker for tonight. And immediately, I disliked him. Incidentally, that man is sitting in his audience here tonight. Or just sitting here this morning, rather. I looked at him, and he was well-tailored. Nice suit, boutonniere on his lapel. Two AA gals were with him, beautifully gowned. They were really nice, and I thought to myself, why a bunch of phony. They spoiled the whole meeting for me even before it got underway. Well, at these close meetings, we sit around a table like you are here, and this is the way we discuss our problems or talk AA. But this character said, well, he said, if you don't mind, he said, I'll stand up and speak. And he did. And immediately I took out my pencil and put him on my little black book. The head of the list. This phony I wanted nothing to do with. Well, you know, in spite of the fact that I didn't want to listen, his delivery and the impact was so terrific that from that day on, I decided I could sense that there was something in AA that I needed and I wanted very desperately. And I thought that night, no matter what it takes, I'll go to any length to get it. Well, I don't have to tell you that this man has been a terrific friend throughout the years. We still keep in constant touch. As a matter of fact, I think I saw him last Monday. And we have been terrific friends throughout the years. And the amazing thing, mind you, this man, well, I don't want to build anybody up. I know we don't eulogize. I'm not using his name, and I'm not going to tell you anything or where he's at, but he's in this audience. But here is a man, I'm a nobody, understand, really. You see, I work in a garage, not in the office. I work in the back. I'm a body and fender man. I reconstruct wrecks. And I'm such a, maybe this comes natural, I'm so good at deception that I fool them and I draw a check every Saturday. Here I am, a guy, a body and fender man. This guy is in advertising for one of our biggest Chicago newspapers. And the thing that impressed me was that he was never too busy, because in the beginning I always had this urge to go back to the drink, and somebody said, if you feel depressed or feel like you want to call up another alcoholic. Well, I had known these other men in my group for 7 weeks before I called this man. And he was never too busy to listen to a mechanic or a body man or whatever you want to title I might have, if I have one. He was never too busy, in spite of the fact that here we were from opposite side of the tracks, if we could put it that way. We are raised in different environments. We come from a different level of society, and certainly from a different level economically. Yet this man was never too busy. And throughout the years, I have seen not only him, but many people everywhere, where they go down and help people out of Skid Row. They're never too busy. They care enough. No matter where he comes, this is what I saw when I came into AA. This is the example that was set before me when I came, and this is the way I try to operate. I said, try. I try to help wherever I can. Well, after I left from this meeting, I think that this was, I felt so elated with this newfound thing that I have found in AA, that I went down to the downtown office in Chicago. And you know these little 12-step cars, I bought loads of them, and I had them in my pocket, and I'd ride the streetcars or a crowded elevator, and any likely candidate, I would sneak over and put one in his pocket. Or I was talking AA to everybody. They said, you can't solicit for membership, we don't do this. I went to all the local who's gals, and I said, is there a drunk here that I can talk to? Well, it didn't work. I mean, I had no success, in a sense, but it kept me busy and it kept me sober. So my efforts weren't a complete loss. Time went on. I remained in AA. I've met many people. I've made friends across the country. And I often wonder, now here this morning, me, a guy who comes from the other side of the track, to have this great honor and this great privilege, which I consider it to be here before you this morning. Certainly, I think that maybe somebody goofed here this morning, because I've met so many people here from the Akron area that you have terrific talent here. You could have had somebody else here before this mic this morning, who probably would have really inspired you, could probably really said something that would have set you off, maybe like I was set off on this business of putting 12-step cards in other drunk pockets or something of this kind. But anyway, I come into AA and everything starts to change for me. And I don't talk about the material, because this is the least important of all. Boy, it's nice that now that my wife has the few comforts that certainly she was entitled to, I think. The fact that she stuck to me so many years, and when everybody else slammed the door in my face, somehow my wife always opened the door for me. She stood by me just like the wives of other alcoholics in this audience this morning. She has been a terrific friend and a terrific pal. Everybody has been wonderful in AA. Now, the things that I've gotten out of AA, well, I've got a feeling of security. This I took a little while, but I got to that point where I had this feeling of security. And I don't mean security in the fact that I'm not going to drink. I don't mean this. But there was something comfortable about this feeling that I had. I had the tools by which I could reconstruct my life, because I realized that my life is affected not only this alcoholic business, but my life is affected in other areas. Certainly my emotional life has been upset. I can't handle it too well yet. The second part of the first step that says, and my life has become unmanageable, I can't stand here and tell you that I have completely rearranged my life so that I can handle it constructively and effectively, but certainly this is what I am shooting for, because I am of the opinion that drinking is not my problem. Not completely, not totally. I'm an alcoholic. The only thing I think that this drink does is intensify this, whatever is wrong with my emotional life. My spiritual life has been affected. My problem, basically, I think, and I could be wrong because I often am, is my thinking. I hear this phrase in AA, stinking thinking, and I got to wondering. I think this is my problem, thinking or lack of thinking. Something that I could channel, well, how could I channel when I can't think right? But if I only could, but I know that the tools are here. This is my problem, thinking. Because I don't think that there's anything in life that you can separate from this process of thinking, no matter what it is. Now, I have friends here that we rode together, and everybody has an automobile, including me. Hooray for me, too, because of this. I'm being sober, too, you know. I drive a Buick. My friend over there drives a Lark. Another guy's got a Cadillac. Another guy's got a, well, but it isn't the fact. I would like to believe that we drive different cars, not because we can afford different brands of automobiles. I don't think this is true. I think that we drive these different automobiles because this is a reflection of the way we think. Now, the way you walk, the way you talk, and the way you comb your hair, all right, this is a reflection of the way you think. The way you're dressed this morning, and I, this is a reflection of the way I think, and you too. The kind of a wife or the kind of a husband you have chosen or about to choose, this is a reflection of the way you think. So I think that my problem of drinking stems back from something a little more that's wrong with me. There's that second step that says that I came to believe that this power could restore me to sanity. Certainly there is something off balance. And AA has given me the ability, and I hope it gives me the ability, continues to give me this ability, to think along the same lines that you and I are thinking this morning, of being helpful, of staying sober, and speaking of being helpful. You know, this thing has broadened in a wide scope for me and my family. We have three boys. We have one boy, 22. He's the baby. We have a boy, 29, and a boy, 31. That's our oldest boy. It so happens that the 31-year-old, he was in the Marines for 6 years. The one that was the 29, he was in the Army for 8. And the 22 is mentally retired. That means not only that he is slow in learning, he's 22, he has the mind maybe of a 7-year-old. He is one of the hospitals there in Chicago. Now, we go out to this hospital. You know, my wife My wife is a big wheel in this. They have an organization, you know, for the mentally retarded with affiliations throughout the country. My wife is a big deal in this thing. She's a big officer, and it's like AA, though, you know, big title, but no money. No money, and I think that maybe this business that she sees that how we in AA help one another, and she having so much time in her hand, she is doing something. So we go out to Lincoln to visit our boy. In the meantime, these people, the parents, they get together and they raise funds and they run little parties, covered dish dinners and potluck dinners, and one drives on the street at a certain time each year. They raise money to do something extra for these boys. In our cottage where the boy, our boy, is at, there's 147. My wife has put in electric fans, the dog fans in the ceiling. Not our money, that's drive money. I don't think I could pay for the cable, let alone the fans. Water coolers, television sets, all kinds of things to make comfortable, things comfortable, not only for my boy, but for the other 146. And this is the way this works, something like AA, that we help each other. Well, there's a visiting room there, and there is one young man, I'd say young man, he's, I don't know, 45, 47. He is a deaf and dumb youth, and he sits in a wheelchair. His sister comes to visit him, and I have tried to help the sister, feed him with a spoon or something of this kind. And she's a little frail woman, and there's a ramp that runs out of this visiting room out to the level of the street, and I have offered to wheel this thing out. And I've wheeled him out several times, and one day this man on the wheelchair, he turned around with twisted limbs, and with great effort, he patted my arm so much as to say, "Thank you." You see, kindness responds to kindness. And this is what I found in AA, kindness. Everybody has been terrific, kind. This is much different than this world that I lived in, this society that I lived, where people looked down with me with scorn, with contempt, with indifference. I came into AA and I figured after a little while that here I belong. I could fit in here somewhere, and people didn't care who I was or where I was from. And yet by making just a brief observation, you know, in Chicago we have, I should imagine, making just a rough estimate, maybe 250,000 Mexican people. Yet, you won't find over 6 people of Mexican descent in Alcoholics Anonymous. And yet the condition is the same. We have just as many alcoholics, just as many people, but somehow, now this is something. I remember that Bill told us about how AA had started in Australia. They called it AA, if you remember. He told us how they started it in Sweden. Well, maybe the story someday will be told from this stand, how AA finally got a firm hold amongst the people of my nationality, because for some strange reason, we don't seem to reach them. Oh, they'll come to meetings for 2 or 3 or 5 weeks, and then they disappear. I don't know how it is around this part of the country, but in Chicago, we don't have much luck. And when I came in and I got teamed up with this fellow with a boutonniere, whose first initial is Walter, we could envision that maybe together and with his knowledge and background and know-how of AA, maybe we could establish a group of this kind in the Chicago area, but met with very little success. Oh, we drew them into the group and we worked with them, but somehow they didn't stay. So I don't know whether this communication has fully been established or not. You know, I heard a story that was told by a man at one of a meeting probably such as this, and he was telling a story that he said that most people, including himself, He thought that a desert was dry because of the barrenness of the land. He said, but after living on a desert, he discovered that this was not so. A desert is not barren because of the dryness of the land. It's because of the drift of the sand. And he went on to say that if someone would come along this desert and set up barriers and stop the drift of this sand, pretty soon from the very fertility of that soil that is there, a new life would spring forth. And I said, this is AA. This is AA. You know that me, I suppose you two, are like, here I was before I come in, drifting from place to place with no organization in my life, with no system of living, until two men came to my home and they set up 12 barriers to stop the drift of my life, just like in your case. And from the very good qualities in your soul, a new life was born. And I said, this is AA. And he told another story, and I understood it, because there's another big guy back there who comes from Iowa, and he's in the same party with me. And I understand it because he lives not too far off the Mississippi River, and I go fishing. You know, there's a madness to my method. He's a president of a private fishing club, and that's in an AA too. And I love to fish. So he's my friend, you know. But I noticed that along the Mississippi there are houses that are built on stilts. And this man was telling the story about these houses that are built on stilts along the shores of I don't remember what river, but they were similar to this. And he said that he noticed that there were workmen putting up new beams under these houses, but they never removed the old ones. So curiosity got the best of him, so he went and asked these men why it was they didn't remove. And one of the workmen said, no, we don't do this. He said, we let the weight of the house settle on the new beams, and pretty soon the old ones will fall away. Well, this is AA. This is AA. Because you see, somebody came to your home and mine, and they set up 12 new piers under your life. And they didn't say to you or me, you have to be more honest. You have to be more tolerant. You have to develop charity. And you have to, they didn't say this. But pretty soon our old defects started to fall away. And these new 12 new piers that they brought to us started to support our life. And all of this makes sense to me. This makes sense to me. And this is about the way it runs. Well, I probably have talked longer. You know, I can't talk good, but I can talk long. And maybe just in closing, at the risk of hurting the feelings of the old-timers, I don't know that there's old-timers in AA to begin with. They talk about length of sobriety. I don't think that this is the important thing. I mean to me. I think it's the quality that makes the difference. It isn't the length. It's the quality. Now, a guy could be in 6 months or a gap. And I think that he could be just as solid. The benefits that he derives or what he gives, he can be just as terrible in 6 months as he can in 20 years. It's the quality. All the other attributes and factors that play into this quality. I think this is the important, not the length. So, at the risk of hurting the feelings of the old-timers, I would like to close by addressing my remarks to the younger folk, I mean in AA. I don't mean age, but those that have been in AA 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, or something of this kind. I would like to say to you, to all of you, I would like to say that you know that I have been trying to tell you the truth. If I were a George Washington, you would believe it. If I were a Christopher Columbus, I would chart you a happy voyage upon a calm sea of happiness and contentment. If I were a Patrick Henry, I would give you liberty instead of death. And if I were a Crosby, I would delight you with a melody. Going my way, but I'm neither of these. I'm just an alcoholic. So the best I can do is offer you my hand. Take it. Accept this public solicitation, or take the hand of any other AA. For I am sure that together we can all walk hand in hand on a highway to our happy destiny.